Chapter 9, The Consciousness Model. Ramana Maharshi taught that you could achieve the stage of butterfly if you simply ask yourself again and again, "Who am I?" The inquiry, "Who am I?" will destroy all other thoughts, and like the stick used for stirring the burning pyre, it will itself in the end get destroyed. Then there will arise self-realization. End of quote. That's much more easily said than done, and like any other teaching in the back of the movie theater, if it worked, there would be a lot of butterflies populating the earth by now. So you're going to take a little different approach that does work. For approximately the next 2 years in your cocoon, you're going to focus on answering the question, "Who am I not?" along with the question, "What is true?" At least, that's what worked for me and a few other scouts and got us where we are today. Basically, before you can find the true answer to "Who am I?", you have to strip away all the false answers you've collected during your lifetime, especially those you picked up belonging to various groups in the back of the movie theater. Remember that in order for a caterpillar to transform into a butterfly, it has to first realize it's not a caterpillar anymore. Remember what the Wikipedia said: it is during the time of pupation that the adult structures of the insect are formed, while the larval structures are broken down. So we're going to take a closer look at some of the beliefs commonly held around the topic of "Who am I?" and whether they are true or not. And one of the most common that has become very popular among New Age groups is, "You create your own reality." But is that true? First of all, since the New Age apparently never found out that reality is actually a holographic image and not real at all, the saying is not true right off the bat. But that's just a minor error, and I'm very willing to amend their slogan slightly to conform to quantum physics and say, "You create your own holographic universe," so we can focus on the important issues. You create your own holographic universe. Is that true? If so, exactly who is the you who is creating your own holographic universe? Let's find out by picking up where we left off in our study of quantum physics in the last part of this book. We said, what we have always thought of as our life, our reality, is not real, according to quantum physics, but actually a holographic 3D movie we have been immersed in, whose wave frequencies have been downloaded from the field to our brain, where they are translated into particles located in space and time and projected out there for us to perceive through our senses. And the question we asked was, who or what is creating the holographic movies I'm experiencing as my reality? You'll remember that a hologram is a two-step process, and in the second step, the reference beam is directed toward the holographic plate or film containing the object in order to get the object to pop out into reality. What we didn't discuss yet is that a single piece of holographic film is capable of storing many, many objects, and in fact, holography may soon replace other laser-based storage techniques because of its capacity to hold so much information. The advantage of this type of data storage is that the volume of the recording media is used instead of just the surface. Which object or objects pop out when you direct a reference beam at the film depends on the angle of the reference beam. In other words, you can choose which holographic images to create by using different angles for the reference beam to select the exact wave patterns you want that are stored on the holographic film. Now let's apply that to our holographic universe. Some sort of reference beam, we don't know what yet, is directed at the field, which is like a gigantic piece of holographic film that already contains all the wave frequencies required for an infinite number of holograms, and out pops reality. So now we can ask our question even more specifically. Who or what is the reference beam that chooses certain wave frequencies from the field to create our holographic reality? The best answer anyone has come up with so far is consciousness. Consciousness is what chooses the precise wave frequencies in the field and downloads them to a human brain, which then converts them into space-time particles and out pops our reality. Imagine in your mind a picture with consciousness on the left, shining a reference beam at the field in the middle, and out pops reality on the right. Reality includes everything in the physical universe: the earth, buildings, cars, and even human bodies. Of course, this process is not two-dimensional or linear as described in this picture. A more realistic depiction might be three-dimensional concentric circles, with reality in the middle, the field around it, and consciousness around the field. You could think of it like a peach, where the peach pit is reality, the field is the meat of the peach that you eat, and consciousness is the skin. However, we're stuck with two-dimensional linear pictures right now, at least until this book can be made holographically. Consciousness is what chooses the precise wave frequencies in the field and downloads them to a human brain, which then converts them into space-time particles and out pops our reality. This is where quantum physicists split into two main groups. One group, the pure scientists, cannot accept this answer, although it is the most logical and the simplest, and therefore satisfies Occam's razor and the principle of parsimony. That's because consciousness cannot be measured or dealt with in the normal scientific way. Consciousness simply does not lend itself well to mathematical equations or statistical research. But there are a significant number of quantum physicists who understand that consciousness is not only the best answer, but also the most workable. One of those is Dr. Amit Goswami, in my estimation, one of the great thinkers of our time. Dr. Goswami is Professor Emeritus in Theoretical Physics at the University of Oregon, Senior Scholar in Residence at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and author of 8 books on quantum physics, including The Self-Aware Universe and Science and Spirituality, A Quantum Integration. Dr. Goswami says,
quantum physics enables us to see directly that we can make sense of the world only if we base the world on consciousness. World is made of consciousness. World is consciousness. Consciousness is the ground of being. Quantum physics makes this as clear as daylight. Consciousness must be involved. And so, for the first time, science encounters free will. Consciousness is free because there is no mathematical description of the subject in our science. Only objects can be described mathematically, and only to the extent that they are possibilities. The question still remains paramount: who is the chooser? And when we see that, then we see that the chooser is free. There is freedom of choice. And of that freedom of choice comes our actual experience.
Dr. Jeffrey Satinover, teaching fellow in physics at Yale University, has these thoughts.
If you put it that there is an intangible world that affects the tangible world of our experience, and if you then say that's what quantum mechanics says, and granted, that's a fair way of trying to put into English something which is very, very difficult to grasp, but it then leads quite naturally to the conclusion that quantum mechanics says that there is a spiritual world that makes this choice, that there's another world that is intangible that affects and influences the physical world. That intangibility, however, is itself the bedrock of physical reality. It may be intangible, but it is, and we can't really say what it is or why it's there, but it is in fact the most fundamental feature of matter.
Fred Alan Wolf, theoretical physicist, puts it this way.
Quantum physics says that consciousness is playing a role. It says there's a secret underground that seems to be affecting the reality we live in, and that this reality we live in is not at all what it appears to be.
And Dr. Andrew Newberg, director for the Center of Spirituality and the Neurosciences at the University of Pennsylvania, asks,
whether or not we're just living in a big holodeck or not, it's a question that we don't necessarily have a good answer to. So it is conceivable that all of this really is just a great illusion.
So what is the relationship between consciousness and material reality? Whether or not the material world can actually be derived from a consciousness reality, or whether consciousness itself could even be the fundamental stuff of the universe, so to speak, instead of the cold dark matter or the other aspects of matter that physicists have been looking for, maybe it has something more to do with consciousness. And in that regard, then we really can think about the universe as being more a state of consciousness, or more inundated with consciousness, much more so than the material reality that we normally look at.
So a number of highly respected and thoughtful quantum physicists have concluded that consciousness is what chooses the exact wave frequencies from the field it wants to use to create our holographic experiences. However, just like the field, no one can prove consciousness exists. But also like the field, when we assume consciousness must be involved, as Dr. Goswami says, we can then build a very successful model of how our world works and use that model in very practical and successful everyday applications. So the statement, you create your own holographic universe, is not true. Since the you think of as you, the one on the reality side of the field, is not creating that reality. It might be closer to the truth to say, your consciousness creates your own holographic universe. But what exactly is consciousness? If you would like a good laugh, watch a short video from What the Bleep Down the Rabbit Hole on YouTube, where some of the brightest people in the field of quantum physics try to give an answer. And then, after you've stopped laughing, please appreciate the honesty and humility with which all those great minds struggled with this question, because defining consciousness is not easy at all. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines consciousness as the quality or state of being aware, especially of something within oneself. In philosophy, at its most basic level, consciousness may be said to be the process of a thinker focusing the thought on some aspect of existence. In human beings, consciousness is understood to include meta-awareness, an awareness that one is aware. In many spiritual teachings, consciousness is synonymous with the human soul or spirit, the immortal part of a human being. And higher consciousness, also called superconsciousness, objective consciousness, Buddhic consciousness, God consciousness, Christ consciousness, and cosmic consciousness, are expressions used to denote the consciousness of a human being who has reached a higher level of evolutionary development. But as we read on Answers.com, we may be forced to admit that consciousness, like infinity and the particle wave concepts in quantum mechanics, is a property that cannot be made intuitively straightforward. Consciousness, like gravity, mass, and charge, may be one of the irreducible properties of the universe for which no further account is possible. Unquote. If you visit Answers.com and Wikipedia.com and search for consciousness, you will find essay upon essay, dozens of them, from respected researchers trying to explain what consciousness is, all with a little different take on the word. For me, the last quote is perhaps the most significant and worth repeating. Consciousness, like gravity, mass, and charge, may be one of the irreducible properties of the universe for which no further account is possible. So I think it's clear no one really knows exactly what consciousness is or how to properly define it. The truth is, we will never know. We only know it must exist. We are, in fact, incapable of knowing, and always will be incapable of knowing, simply because we are on the other side of the field from consciousness. And our brains, at least according to Prebram, are designed as holographic receivers and translators and have no capacity or ability to access or process any information on the other side of the field. We do know that consciousness is not the body, the brain, the mind, the intellect, or anything else in the holographic universe. It is not a thing. It is the creator of things. Am I saying that we, the I who is writing this book, and the you who are listening to it, have no consciousness? No. I'm saying the word consciousness has been applied to mean a great many things in our holographic universe, and it's very confusing to then use it to describe what exists on the other side of the field. Yes, we, you and I, have a kind of consciousness, which is self-consciousness. We are aware of ourselves, and we are aware of being aware. As the dictionary said, the quality or state of being aware, especially of something within oneself. That's fine, but that's not the consciousness we're talking about that chooses wave frequencies from the field. René Descartes said, "I think, therefore I am." Descartes lived inside the movie theater like everyone else. And as I mentioned before, in quantum physics, we are finding the opposite of what we have always believed is actually closer to the truth. I am, therefore I think. The consciousness we are now talking about is the I am. You and I and our self-consciousness are the I think. For a long time I hesitated to do this, probably in reaction to the two complete dictionaries of new words and meanings that L. Ron Hubbard created for Scientology. I don't even enjoy reading poetry. I like to read plain and simple English with clear and well-accepted words and meanings. But because of all this confusion about the word consciousness, and because this concept is so essential to understand on your path to becoming a butterfly, I feel it's necessary to come up with a new label to properly describe the consciousness on the other side of the field, this irreducible property of the universe, and differentiate it from us on this side of the field. I decided quite early I could not use terms like higher self, higher power, higher consciousness, or expanded self, since they too are so overused and misunderstood. And frankly, they all take a human adult in exactly the opposite direction of where you want to go if you want to become a butterfly. We'll see why shortly. Likewise, I didn't want to use soul or spirit or anything else with any religious connotation. This isn't about theology or ascended masters or higher levels of spirituality. I finally decided on the term infinite I, which admittedly makes some assumptions, but in the end, and for our purposes, turns out to be quite useful. The assumptions are that whatever consciousness exists on the other side of the field has qualities and attributes that are infinite, such as infinite joy, infinite abundance, infinite wisdom, infinite power, infinite and unconditional love, and an infinite desire to play and express itself creatively. This may or may not turn out to be the truth. Perhaps we'll find out when we die, or not. But for now, it's as close to the truth as we're going to get, and, like the concept of the field, provides a very workable model to continue our transformation into a butterfly. It also serves the purpose of making a clear distinction between the infinite eye on one side of the field and you and me on the other side, walking around in holographic bodies on a holographic earth. Therefore, the infinite eye is not the eye who speaks these words, and it's not the you who listens to them. I'm going to give another name to that you and I in a later chapter. I also want to emphasize that when I say infinite I am talking about a single individual consciousness, not consciousness in general, as the word is sometimes used, or some collective consciousness, or cosmic consciousness, or God. Each of us has an infinite I. Perhaps the closest anyone in the movie theater has come to this concept, as far as I can tell, is Jane Roberts in her novels The Oversoul 7 Trilogy, based on the Seth material. So from now on, I will refer to the infinite I as the one who chooses the precise wave frequencies in the field and downloads them to a human brain, which then converts them into space-time particles and out pops our reality. Before we go on, I want to be very clear about this infinite I, because I don't want any confusion with other concepts you may have developed inside the movie theater. The infinite I is not your higher self or expanded self. There are two things wrong with the term higher self. One is the word higher, and the other is the word self. First, higher has no relevance here. It's a judgment word, a comparison, and we will soon see that judgment is the glue that keeps the illusions together inside the movie theater. The word self implies that what we think of as ourself has a higher version. But what we think of as ourself is not true, any of it. In fact, where we're headed with all of this is toward no self. So the last thing we want to think of in terms of the infinite I is that it is some expanded version of us. It's not. Nor is the infinite I some advanced or spiritualized or ascended or purified or better version of you. It is not some enlightened or evolved or avatar or holy version of you either. It is not something you will ever grow into being. You will never become your infinite I, no matter what you do, how good you are, how much you meditate or eat only organic food, or pray, or perform certain ceremonies or rituals. The infinite I is also not God, or all that is, or Allah, or Jehovah, or Yahweh, or the Source. It is not your superconsciousness, objective consciousness, Buddhic consciousness, God consciousness, Christ consciousness, universal consciousness, or cosmic consciousness. Those are all movie theater versions of the truth, and therefore skewed. It is consciousness, yes, your consciousness, but not the consciousness you experience as a human being, which is self-consciousness. Although you are in constant communication with your infinite I, whether you realize it or not, you and it exist in entirely different worlds, on different sides of the field. The best analogy I can think of is an astronaut on the moon, representing you, and Mission Control in Houston, representing your infinite I, with all that space, the field, in between. I like this analogy because not only did your infinite eye send you to the moon in the first place, but it is also your best friend and partner in this adventure. But then, what is the infinite eye, you ask? Good question. I don't know. I know from direct experience of testing and challenging the model that my infinite eye exists, and it created me, and your infinite eye created you. I can tell you what it's not, but I cannot tell you what it is yet. And as I said, I don't think it's possible for anyone to tell you what it is, in truth, as long as we are on this side of the field. The only thing I can say is that in all my dealings and contacts with my own infinite eye, it is something I would be proud to take home to meet the parents. So here is the consciousness model in a nutshell. Your infinite eye chooses an experience for you in the form of wave frequencies from an infinite number of possibilities in the field and downloads them to your brain. Your brain receives those wave frequencies and translates them into physical reality and sends them out there for your senses to perceive. You assign power to the holographic universe you perceive to make it real and to the persons, places, and things you see. But this suggests that there is nothing you can see, hear, taste, feel, smell, or experience in any way that your infinite eye has not chosen for you to experience and then sent to your brain to process into reality. Every moment of every experience you have now, or have ever had and will ever have, has been carefully chosen and created for you by your infinite eye, exactly the way it is, and exactly the way your infinite eye wants it to be, down to the smallest detail. Remember, there is no out there, out there.